My name's John David. I'm a trumpet player, and I work down at the Drake, but I'm a full-time musician. For the most part, I perform down by the river, down by the Wrigley building. And the kind of music that I do is sort of R&B or gospel tunes and stuff like that. You can probably make anywhere from $50 to $200 in a day. It depends on what day it is. Usually the weekends are the best times to go out and play, pending the weather. When it's really nice out and there are really a lot of festivals and different events going on, those are usually the times when you want to come out and, you know, put your things on display.
That was street performer John Davis. You're listening to The Afternoon Shift on WBEZ. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Blues Fest, of course, just starting now. We know it's going on throughout all this weekend, and it's an event that brings street performers like John out. We're talking about the life of a street performer with former busker Cynthia Herring, who's here. Thanks for being here, Cynthia.
It's great to be here.
So now you performed under the name Destiny Quibble, right, when you were here
That's
before?
That's right. I am Destiny Quibble.
So for folks who, so can you tell folks about the name Destiny Quibble should ring a bell for people because it was your 1982 lawsuit against the city, right, that lifted the ban on street performance?
Right. I can take a little bit of the credit. We worked with Rob Winbrandt, and I was actually performing in the subways quite a bit with a classical violinist. And so I played guitar, and he did some violin work with me. And we saw people being arrested, and we were threatened. And even though I think it's partly because I was a teacher, they didn't arrest me or actually give me a citation, but they often asked us to stop. And I applied for lawyers for the creative arts. Thought we have to do something about this. We can't let this continue. And that's when it all started.
What led you to street performance in the first place?
Well, I don't know a lot if everybody knows about the history of street performance, and we can't do it in the time we have here. But there are some amazing artists who started as street performers. And among my favorites are Billie Holiday and Louis Armstrong. And there's a great history of street performance. And for me, as a performer, when you're on the streets and you're in the subways performing your songs, it's very raw. People like it or they don't.
And they probably tell you, right?
Yeah.
You get immediate feedback about that.
Right. And sometimes they'll say, oh, I love that song. And they'll give you a nice donation. And I should mention that my first album that came out in 1983, called Public Rehearsals, Destiny Quibble and the Street, was funded through my street performance and subway performance work. So that's how you get started.
I mean, if you were able to fund that, can you give us an idea of how much money you were making then?
It would be hard to say because it depends on the time of the day. You know, a lot of street performers or subway performers would think about rush hour. I mean, you want to perform in such a way that you're not interfering in people's space because it really is a First Amendment rights issue. And that's how it got passed, that we could actually have that right. But there are other people, and we want to respect that right. So rush hour is a great time for street performance. How much? It'd be hard to say. You could make 25 a day, 50 a day, maybe more, but it just depends. And in our case, we would split it. I often played with this wonderful violinist.
So you would split it with whoever you were with.
And it was always David Smith. He was a wonderful violinist, classically trained.
Okay. What do you think street performers add to a city?
A life, a culture, color, you know, exuberance. Anytime I go to a city like, you know, San Francisco, New Orleans, when I see and hear a street performance, I feel like, oh, this is fun. I want to be here. I want to bring my family. If everybody's arrested and hidden away and everything's just so meticulously controlled, you don't have that life, that joy.
It's almost like these moments of exploration, right? And I imagine even for tourists, I'm just thinking of, as you were saying this, I'm remembering I was in San Francisco a couple months ago, and I just went around the corner, and there was a group playing a steel pan. My family's from Trinidad, and hearing a steel drums, like, you just don't normally hear that.
Beautiful.
And it was just something that you just remember about the city. But what about for people who live in the city, too? Like, it's just, you feel like, did you have relationships with people who you probably saw every day?
There were some people, they came all the time, and sometimes they got to know songs. I would do a lot of original songs, but there's some other songs I would do, and they'd say, oh, I love that song that you did. Could you play it again? And of course, the violinist didn't play classically with me. He would fill in. So they would ask for certain songs, and we wanted people to enjoy the music and make waiting for the subway a little more fun rather than, tedious, you know. So people did like the music, and they asked for certain things, and they were very appreciative. It felt kind of, the street performer world is a family, really. The street performers, I knew them, and we connected to one another, and I would say the people coming by were extended family. You got to know them. They were very supportive.
So let's take a listen to one of your songs. It's called Don't You Let Your Baby Down.
Okay.
Your baby down, don't you let your baby down. 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 Don't you let your baby down.
So tell us about the song, because you're no longer a street performer, right?
Right. I'm doing a lot of different things.
Okay.
If I were performing on the streets of Wekiwachi, I mean, I don't know if it would work. I live in Wekiwachi, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Now.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a lot of people in Wekiwachi, even during season.
Mermaids.
Right, other than that.
We've got our mermaids, and that's a claim to fame for us there. So this particular song is very special. It's an original song, and it was written for a little boy. I work in the schools with, you know, students from different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds. And when I talked to him, he told me, I found out he kept talking about his father. And then later I said to the teacher, gosh, he really loves his dad. And she said, but his dad's in prison, and he doesn't know that this boy's not going to get to see his dad for a long time. He doesn't know about his dad. So I wrote that song, as a lot of artists do, to deal with feelings, emotions. And Don't You Let Your Baby Down features my Tampa Bay World Nation singers, kids from Florida, Pasco Hernando. And it also features lyrics that talk about, and maybe a message to the father, don't you let your baby down. Could be your child, could be your sweetheart, too, the way I wrote it. But it's a theme of really inspiring parents to care about their kids and get involved. But we did it as kind of a rock country swing song. And this was called From the Life and Times of Destiny Quibble, a 29-year music retrospective. So I've been around a while.
So let's get back to the beginning of Destiny Quibble and talk a little bit about what it was like before you filed that lawsuit. I think we have Robert. Robert, are you there?
I am.
Okay, Robert Winbrandt. I want to introduce the Afternoon Shift. He's the attorney who sued on your behalf. You look really happy to hear his voice.
Yes, this is great, Rob.
It is great. Good to hear your voice, Destiny.
Good to hear your voice.
Speaking and singing.
Great.
So, Rob, tell us a little bit about the conditions that prompted the lawsuit. Can you tell us a little bit of what it was like in Chicago before you filed the suit?
Well, and actually, just to correct the record, we achieved legalization of street performance here in Chicago not by filing a lawsuit, but rather by drafting an ordinance and working the political process, which is its own story because it was in the middle of council wars after Harold Washington was elected in 1983. But answering your question directly, I got to know Destiny because I did some pro bono trademark work for her. And Destiny, you may recall, I don't know if you still own the mark She for a rock and roll band.
I don't, but I should, but I own a few other marks.
All right.
But I do own Destiny Quibble.
There you go, the most important one. So Destiny and I had worked on a trademark matter where her mark was being infringed, and then she said to me, you know, Rob, there's this other legal matter I could really use your help on. I was working with her through Lawyers for the Creative Arts. My friends and I get hassled by the police. Some of my friends get their instruments impounded, and they actually have to stay in jail overnight till they finally get released. They get charged, but the police don't show up at the hearings, and they ultimately go home. But it's an enormous hassle here. This city is not friendly to us. Can you help us in some way? And it turned out that at the time, we're in now 1982 or so, just a few years before that, a federal district court in Massachusetts had ruled in litigation that street performance was a First Amendment right, as Destiny mentioned earlier. So armed with that that precedent, even though it didn't apply to the Northern District of Illinois here in Chicago, but armed with some legal precedent, I started working with Destiny and the other street performers to get our aldermen here interested in bringing Chicago into the modern times, as Destiny says, so that we could be like New Orleans and San Francisco and Boston and all the other great places that had street performers who thrived.
And so currently, as it stands now, street performers just have to, I believe they just have to get a permit, right, to perform?
Correct. And I'm not on top of the current situation in terms of what the annual fee is, but it's basically a permitting scheme that started in 1983.
So it's interesting. We got a comment on Facebook that, to be honest, in the last 20 years, this person has seen a decrease in street performers. And back in the 80s, before there was a crackdown, this person was saying the streets and subways featured lots of people with genuine talent. I don't know. I know, Cynthia, you're not living here anymore, but I wonder, Bob, if you are kind of what you see now.
Back in the 80s, I was a city dweller, and so was very much on top of things. But frankly, I work down here, but I'm living out in the suburbs. So, you know, when I'm down here with my family weekends, I enjoy them. I certainly see them on Michigan Avenue mm-hmm. and places we might go. But I certainly know from Cynthia that during her day, you know, the L stops were live with street performers, other places in the Loop, South Loop, et cetera. Up at Lincoln Park Zoo, I know, was a big hangout for street performers. I don't know what's going on there.
I was going to say, I live pretty close to the zoo, and I don't see street performers there that often. So.
Ron the Piper, that was his gig.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was going to add some information my producers just mentioned, that it's a $100 license fee now for street performance, and the license is renewed every 2 years. Cynthia, you know, I wonder... We've been talking a lot about street performers and musicians, but there's also other dance and other performers. And I wonder, you know, in terms of that fabric of adding to the city, how do you think that works out, like for other people who are doing other performers?
Well, again, it's cultural enrichment for the city and the spontaneity of these performers, whether they be dancers, jugglers. We see these artists in other cities, and it's nice, I think, to have them here. I think it's important that they feel welcome, and it's a friendly city. I am not, as you mentioned, I don't live in Chicago now, but I have talked to a few of the street performers when I was here before, and it sounded like they liked what they were doing. They sounded very strong to me. It's hard to say. Maybe we can hear from some of the street performers or people.
Yeah, if you're a street performer, I would say give us a call, 312-923-9239. So we heard one of your songs. Can you tell us what you're doing now? How did you get from street performer to what you're doing now?
Okay, so what you heard was from The Life and Times of Destiny Quibble. It's a 29-year music retrospective, and the songs that start that album were recorded here in Chicago with some of your great musicians. And then I went ahead, and it chronicles my life with music. And in 1991, I started working with children. So I sing in 14 languages. I picked that up along the way.
14 languages or just singing in them?
Yeah. I don't say okay. much except sing in them, sing songs. And,
okay.
And now we're excited. We have a new CD we record under the name World Nation, and it's called Cruisin' in My Wagon, A Journey Through Doo-Wop, Pop, and Swing. And it features kids. And I took him in the studio in Morris Sound down in Tampa, and we've worked about 2 years on that. Very detailed multi-track recordings. Some famous doo-wop artists like Bobby Hendrix and Richie Merritt and Steve Horn are on that album, from the Drifters, the Marcells, and
so
on.
Oh, neat. It looks like I think we have a caller, JV in Woodlawn. Thanks for calling. What's your comment?
Yeah, I was a street performer back in 2005, 2006. Playing gongs and a Javanese xylophone. I was in Gendare, and I was permitted and played downtown in front of the Art Institute and all over Michigan Avenue, and noticed that the permitting situation really created a climate of people with permits and people without permits. And oftentimes those people without permits were people of colors with buckets. And I've seen kids swarmed SWAT team style. And, there's something to be said about the relationship between the doctor's offices on Michigan Avenue and the businesses and what kind of instruments they like to have and why we don't have musicians feeling comfortable to play music in other parts of the city.
So why do you think, can you tell us why you think they don't feel as comfortable?
I think we as a city don't promote tourism in our neighborhoods as much. So all the money is perceived to be downtown,
And so that's where all the street performers
go. Yeah, and I know myself, is when I became unpermitted, I would often go to Wicker Park and play at the Six Corners and would get no attention from cops. But if I wasn't wearing my badge on Michigan Avenue, I would get attention from the police within 15 minutes. So I just wonder the impetus for the policing and the permitting and in our tourism department, getting people out into the neighborhood so that we can all experience this great music.
Thanks for that comment, JV. Cynthia?
Well, I'd be all for a permitting process that didn't have a fee involved. But maybe we can get a movement for that, because if they know who is the performer, what are they doing, and what is their art, the fee, if it's, you know, we don't want a two-class system where someone's buying the permit for $100 and someone else can't. In my case, if I played with somebody, we could, come up with that. And it is more than when we originally got the legalization, but I would, why not have it be free?
All right. Well, thanks, Cynthia Herring. Also, Destiny's Quibble. Thank you, Rob Winbrandt, the attorney who originally sued on your behalf. Let's listen to your cover of Mr. Sandman as we say thank you to you.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own.